AAC meeting, October 3rd, 2016.
Let's have attention. Let's go around the room and see who's here tonight. My name's Pat Sheehan from Silver Spring. Am I right?
Denise Rush, Silver Valley, Vice Chair of the AAC Committee.
Suzanne Campbell from Arlington, Virginia.
Will Shell from Prince George's.
William Buckler, Washington, D.C. Randy Pope from Silver Spring.
David McAtee, Fairfax County.
I'm good. My name is Morris. My name is Morris Lewis. I'm from Fairfax.
Good evening, Christian Kent. Welcome to the center.
Frank Brock, Metro Access.
Maury June, Metro Access.
Ted Vanhue, Fairfax County.
Mayor Kale, Silver Spring.
Doris.
Doris Gray, I live in Fairfax County, Virginia, and also represent the KTV Access for All meeting on this.
I guess it's working. I'm Charlie Proctor. I'm from Silver Spring, and I'm also a representative of the Access for All meeting, and Joe Boswell.
Okay, we can, Washington, D.C.
John Henry Bush, Washington, D.C.
Also report, Prince George's County, and Metro Access, the chair person.
Amber, Louisa Seba, Washington, D.C., second by AAC.
All right. How are we doing on the mics, by the way?
There is an issue with the artist Kobe Seuss, the next group.
Doris, I can't hear you. So can you get closer to the mic?
I am close.
Okay, now I can hear you better.
Yeah, but I think that the system that the volume is cranked down so that they need to check it because it's coming through the headphones at a lower volume than it should be. And secondly, I wanted to use the neck loop, but I was given one that's not compatible with the receiver.
Okay, we check on that note.
Yes.
Boy, I think the volume just got cranked up. Okay. Going to continue with the meeting. We are waiting on Board Chair Jack Evans to meet with us. I'll continue with the agenda as it was presented until he comes, and then we'll switch immediately over to Mr. Evans. So next on the agenda is approval of the minutes. Do I have a motion to approve the minutes as written?
So moved with the minutes.
Okay. Do I have a second? Good. Doris, you have amendments?
Yes, I have amendments that are written.
Could we hold the noise down, please?
I have amendments that are written on the text of the minutes that I brought. They only affect what I said, namely that in my remarks to the general manager, I said not that just there was a problem with platform edge lights at courthouse. I said the day I came over here to that meeting, that was it was happening at courthouse once again. But I said what I said was the problem is at any number of stations throughout the system. And then also I indicated one of the things on here. It was left out that I remarked about the problems with the blue line, not having a shuttle bridge when a safe crack was going on, so they were safe cracking. So, and that's all they were. Just simply what I in relation to our parking.
Okay, good. Other additions?
Yes.
Charlie?
In the minutes, it said that Mr. Crawford said to the GM that I was very impressed with the work he was doing. That's all true. But I added to that, which is not reflected in the minutes, that it was important that he remember that the impact upon people with disabilities, whatever decisions they make, is immeasurably larger simply because of disabilities.
Simply because of what, Charlie?
Of the disabilities of the people that are in having to deal with it.
Okay, thank you. I didn't catch the end of that, so thank you for repeating. Good. Other additions? Okay. Do I have a motion to accept the minutes as amended?
Yes.
And I think I have a second. All those. Good, thank you. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? And all those abstain. Okay, thank you. Minutes are approved. Approval of the agenda. Are there any other? I think we have a fairly packed agenda tonight, particularly if the chair of the board coming to speak to us. Any additions, or do we have any other agenda items people would like to see for following meetings?
Mr.
Chair. Do I have approval of the agenda?
Mr. Chair.
Go ahead, Doris.
I was just wondering whether on this agenda we will be discussing and taking any position on the early closure, the proposed early closure of metro stations, so that we have a position for the AAC at the upcoming public hearing.
Yes, I would expect that to be done during the bus rail committee. Certainly, if we don't do it today, we can put it under doing all the business.
So do we need a motion to defer that to the bus rail?
No, I think that by consensus we can put that under bus rail. I don't have as a topic item, Doris will make sure that's covered. Thank you for that. I agree.
I think we need to discuss it before the bus rail if we have time. The same thing with the other ride. We keep moving it, but it's moving faster than we're moving.
Okay, do you want to see the abilities ride covered under metro access?
No, I want to see it discussed if we have any time today. You can't keep putting it off because, like you said, it's moving faster than we are.
Okay, we'll put that on the agenda after bus rail.
Is there a new business, Mr. Chairman?
Is there a new business? There generally is under all the under each agenda. Okay, we'll add hang on. We'll add abilities Ryan on the agenda, and we'll make sure we talk about the early closures of the rail stations. Elver?
Yes, please.
Okay, and Randy, I think you were also on the agenda. Just pick it.
Yes, this is Randy, and just two things. An update to share more information about the app. And this is an app that can be used with iPhones or smartphones, different kinds of devices. Just wanting to get some more information about where that is in the process. And then secondly, if we can also find out about the progress on the contract with Uber and Lyft and various transportation providers.
Right, abilities, right. We have that on the agenda. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I kind of have a public comment, and my public comment is based on
Right. Right now, I'm still on the agenda.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you for that. Dunnies? Was there anybody else that wanted to add something to the agenda? Do I have a motion to accept the agenda as amended?
I so
moved. We so moved. Okay. I guess there's a seconds and all that kind of thing. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? And those abstain. Now, you guys need to keep me honest and make sure I don't forget anything I just agreed to. Deal? Good deal. Deal, Denise. Very good. Okay.
More report?
Thank you for that. I can read, yeah. Running through my agenda. Do I have any additions or corrections to the board report?
Yeah.
Okay, Doris, go ahead.
Okay, I think I need help because I didn't flash it in my notes, but I do have it annotated. I believe it has to do with the first item. Issue, but somebody can help me.
Okay, Doris, help me. Thank you, sir. That information for the board, she got it.
Go ahead. Dee, go ahead. Good. Then this is to amend the board report.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay, one was a wording clarification to say that travel training was important for the riders of public transportation who are blind and vision impaired. At the minimum, you put the riders in because that it just grammatically correct. But there was something else on there.
The other piece, Doris, you had a note for some in test said they preferred the wider, more detectable barriers.
Yes, I recall that that some of the people who were at the test mentioned that they preferred the wider barriers, I think the rubber mesh or something, rather than the thinner, newer barriers because they're easy to use.
Okay.
Okay, so
thank
you,
you
see where that can be amended? Good, thank you. Are there amendments to the board report?
I move it to pass.
Second. Do we have a second?
Yeah.
Move that the board report be accepted as amended. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed and those abstained. Thank you very much. Let's see. I guess we jump now to public comment period. Am I right, Kate?
Yes, sir. We do that. And I have three public comments. Actually, four. So
we have to be flexible.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Chair, will you be using the timer for public comment?
Certainly will. Thank you. And each public comment is
3 minutes.
3 minutes. 3 minutes. Good. That's what I thought.
I have first, Mr. David, please. David.
Hi, David Costa, I'm a visual impaired writer. On Friday, July 29th, I'm not sure if this topic was discussed in a previous meeting, but on Friday, July 29th, I was boarding the train at the Grover Metro, and it happened to be a new series train, and I used my cane just as normal to enter the train, as I've done for nearly a decade now, and found myself falling into the track, into the gap that is created between the two train cars. Really connect, was one of the scariest, if not the scariest, moment of my life, and I wanted to make sure that the Accessibility Board was aware of this issue. After attempting to try to get out of the train by just grabbing on, I'm sorry, out of the gap that's created between the two train cars, the only avenue I had to get out was to literally act like I'm getting out of a pool, jumping out of a pool. I would display it here if I didn't have the microphone, but after a couple of jumps and attempts, I luckily was strong and tall enough to get out of this hole, and just enough time to stand up on the train platform and have the train go away, start to depart. Literally 2 minutes. If I was not tall enough, not strong enough, an elderly person, another, you know, disability, a normal person, or, you know, a non-disabled person, what have you, who knows what could have happened. So I basically, my point of bringing this story up to you guys is just that I want to identify new solutions to prevent anybody from falling into the gap that's created between these new train car series, if that is as simple as the ropes that connect the trains. some simple piece of plastic that is put onto the bottom between train cars that Janine would recognize. When you tap it, a different sound effect, like a street crossing sound effect that you can put, you know, where the doors are. I'm up for all sorts of discussion, but I know my time is short, so I just wanted to raise this issue, and I'm happy to discuss it with anybody who's willing to listen to me. And I'm also willing to talk about the response that I've received from Metro thus far, which I personally have guilt that has not been very responsive and or understanding of the issue at hand.
Okay, sir. Thank you. Right now, for the pause public comment period, was just informed that the Chair Jack Evans is here, Chairman of the Board. So I'd like to give time to him on the agenda to go through his remarks. I think we'll have enough time for questions and all. Welcome, sir. It's a privilege and an honor to have you to talk to us. We appreciate your time and understand your time is limited, so the floor is yours.
Well, thank you very much, and good evening, everyone. Good evening, and thank you for having me to here to address, talk to you all about what's happening in Metro, more importantly, from my point of view, to hear your comments, concerns, and questions. Patrick, thank you. You always do a great job representing the organization. Give him a round of applause, Patrick. Thank you. Important to all of us in Metro. So some of you know me, some of you don't. So I'll maybe give you a little background about my involvement here in Metro. You may know me more as a council member. I'm on the Washington, D.C. City Council representing Ward 2, which is where we are today. So I'm one of the largest wards in the city, downtown area, plus all the surrounding neighborhoods. Been on the council now over 25 years. Longest serving member of the council in the history of the D.C. Council, which is somewhat of an achievement. Thank you very much. And my involvement with Metro goes back to when I first came on the council in 1991. I came on the board of Metro in 1993, served until 1999, twice as chair. And our challenge back in those days was to build Metro. We were actually building it at a very slow pace. A gentleman by the name of David Gunn was the general manager, and we came up with this idea called the fast track, and the idea was to build all the lines at the same time so we could actually get it done. And it was very successful. By 2001, as you know, we completed the 103 mile system. And I left the board at the end of 2000 and pretty much didn't really give Metro much thought after that. I was on the council as a finance chair. The city was struggling financially, and myself, Mayor Wade, and others were trying to turn the city around, so that was really my focus. Read about Metro in the paper. It was somewhat disturbing every once in a while to read about how it wasn't working as well as it should. Clearly, we had the Fort Totten accident, which was a catastrophe for Metro. But as always, you thought, well, things were being taken care of, I assume, the way they should have been. Came January of last year, not this January, but January of the year before. We needed somebody to go back on the Metro board. Our mayor, Muriel Bowser, had been on the board. She was no longer on the council, though, and so we needed somebody from the council. We had a lot of new members on the council. Nobody really knew what to do or wanted to do it, so I said, sure, I'd be glad to do it. Came back on the board. You know, it was one of those, how hard can it be? Well, little did I know, what I was getting into. And before my very first meeting, our CFO came to see me, Jeff DeWitt, and said, don't vote on anything over there. The finances are in terrible shape. And indeed, after my first meeting, I realized they were. And then we had a tragedy again. I came back on the board on a Thursday. The following Monday, Carol Glover, and I always want to remember that she had a name. She was a grandmother. She was 61 years old. She was my age. You know, suffocated to death on the floor of a Metro car. Inexcusable. Just outrageous. And then it showed me not only were the finances of this organization in trouble, but the operations were in trouble. And you were left in the wonderment at what happened during the ensuing 15 years between the time I left and the time I came back. And all through that year, as you know, we didn't have a general manager. We were struggling. It was really a very difficult time for Metro. And I decided if I'm going to be here, I'm going to be chairman of the board. There's too much that needs to be done. So I became chairman in January, this past January. We were lucky. We got Paul Wienfeld hired in October, the prior October. And we really set about changing this organization, and that's where all of you come in, because your input as writers, as people who care, are so important to this organization. So what are the fundamental building blocks we have to do? Well, we have to start out with the finances. And as you know, on the finance side, we had not had an audit on time in 2 years. We were 9 months late before I got here, and then we were 4 months late. And that's just absolutely inexcusable. And I took a page out of Tony Williams' book, and this is a true story. I said to the whole audit team, Inspector General, everybody else, if you don't get this audit done on time this year, I'm going to quit. But before I do, I'm going to fire every one of you. And it's a true story. And I will tell you, on October 28th, that audit is due, it will be on time for the first time in several years. And so you just have to start with the premise that we've got to do things right around here. At least now I understand the finances. Nobody seemed to even understand them, so at least I understand them and kind of how bad they are. But I have ideas about how we can help correct those. And then on the operations side, the maintenance side, I think Paul is doing a very good job trying to figure out how much work needs to be done and how to get the work done. And that's where the whole SafeTrack plan came in. That the whole system needs work, but there are 15 parts of the system that are just a wreck. And so we're focusing on them one after another, trying to get the 15 worst parts fixed. So, and I say this every meeting I go to, and I've been all over this region now talking to everybody, that when we're done with SafeTrack in April, we're not done. We just have a bad system at that point, not a terrible system. So we really still have a lot of work throughout the system that needs to be done. It's really $18 billion worth of work over the next 10 years that needs to be done. And all I can say is, you know, this is just a tremendous example of government not doing what it's supposed to do, of allowing, not doing the preventive maintenance, allowing a system that at one time was the envy of every city in America, if not every city in the country, in the world, to fall into a total disrepair. And, you know, part of it is the governing structure, as you saw when I said in the paper the other day. It's up to me, I just throw the whole board out and start over with five people or something, you know, and I can't do that. But the governing structure doesn't work, and really the management, a lot of it. And Paul's replaced a lot of the management. As you know, we have a new safety director, we have a new COO, and our treasurer, you know, all of that, CFO are relatively new. And we have, I think it's 13 out of 16 members of the board are new. So we really made some dramatic changes in the governing. People who are here, but still there's fundamental flaws in the system that are in serious need. So as we go forward, you know, my challenge is to fix the system, and I fully intend to do that. The part I left out about representing what I represent in D.C. in Ward 2, I have 15 metro stops in Ward 2. That is more than any political jurisdiction in any other political jurisdiction in this region. No other ward, no other county, no other city, no other anything has 15 metro stops in it. So this is very important to me that this system work. And the challenge I have, as Paul tries to fix it, is to get the money to fix it. And as we go forward, we have a challenge. We are going to be $300 million short in our preparation of our fiscal year 18 budget, which we are doing right now. And so the challenge for me is not only to get the operating dollars, but these billions of dollars in capital dollars. We need to buy new rail cars, fix the system, to fix the leaky tunnel out on the Red Line and all of those things. So we have quite a challenge ahead of us. But frankly, I know we can do this. It's just going to take some time and some focus and some people leadership to make it happen. So Patrick, let me turn it back over to you. I just wanted to give you a broad overview of where we are. I want to hear some of your issues and then concerns and questions. So I'll go forward from there.
Very good. Thank you, sir. I appreciate that. I'm going to go around the room. We're going to go around Robin so everyone gets a chance.
Before I finish, yes. Let me introduce Tom Lipinski over here. Tom is my assistant, my communications director of the council, covers Metro for me, and frankly knows more about this than I do. He is really knowledgeable. So if you have any other questions or concerns too, we can raise them with Tom.
Very good. Tap, you're the first one to ask a question. Go ahead. 3 minutes per question.
Mr. Chairman, you said this bill, the vote, that you prefer to have five members outside the jurisdiction of.
Yeah, that was more of a joke, but yes, that's true. Yeah. Some true to it, some not.
Well, I read that in the paper.
Yeah.
Now, the reason because we feel that too much interest going on for the each state's representative are looking at their own interest than the overall metro's interest. Am I right? Now, what is it, what the state 990 is going through, has it become, or is it head, or what is the status?
To change the governance structure of metro, it was started, as you know, back in 1967. And it's an agreement reached by Maryland, Virginia, and the District of Columbia, which actually didn't exist back then, and the federal government. So everyone signed the compact. So to change that takes the agreement of all the parties, and I don't think we'll ever get that. So I think we're stuck with what we have. But my point of making a comment was, you have four members from each jurisdiction who have a dual responsibility. They have a fiduciary duty to the people who appointed them, and a fiduciary duty to this organization, Metro. And there's no other organization in the country that has that. And frankly, Kevin Orr, who studied this for us, said it's probably an illegal structure. You can't serve two masters. You can only serve one. And as I've seen Metro, it was my second go-around, and it was that way the first go-around, people's loyalty is more to their jurisdiction than it is to the organization. And so consequently, things don't get done here that should. Finances don't get done. Payments don't get done. Decisions are made. And in fact, yeah, I harbor a similar bias. Don't get me wrong. I'm not exempting myself. I mean, I represent the downtown of the entire metropolitan region. Okay? I have 50% of the liquor licenses, 70% of the hotel rooms, the entire nightlife of this region in my ward. I want late night hours. Okay? That's important to me. Important to my ward, important to my family. If I represent Virginia and Maryland, I don't care about downtown. All I want to do is get my people to work and back home. That's what I want. I want a commuter rail system. And so I don't care about late night. So you don't see what I'm saying. So I'm parochial in that regard. And I want a subway system. People from the suburbs want a commuter rail system. So we have that built-in tension with this organization. And so if you had five people who came from Mars who had no interest in any of that, maybe they would make better decisions, and maybe not. I would say that that example was not just out of the blue. When the District of Columbia went under back in 1995, the federal government came in and appointed a five-person control board. Five members of a board running the city who had no connection into the politics of our city. And it actually worked pretty well. And so there is an example of that. But it will never happen here because we'll never get that kind of an agreement. So my view is we're stuck with what we got. So let's make the best of it before you head. So that's what I'm talking.
Thank you, sir. Larry Hale, you're next.
I think my comment is more of a scheme, I think.
You're kind of quiet on the mic, sir.
I'm very soft-spoken. mine is sort of a scheme plan, and it comes from a place of great experience. Essentially what I do. When we talk about access, I want it to be one of these things where it's a thought about from the top down, and not just, yes, my staff and I are committed to access, but really coming up with tangible ways of really driving that home, because in order for true access to be provided, it has to be bought into from the top all the way down. And a system that's truly accessible has several things. It clearly defines set of laws, we train to make sure that people understand what those regulations are, and also with quality assurance, how do you make sure that everything works the way that it should be, identify trends and fix things that are issues. So I guess what I'm thinking is making sure that accessibility is not just thought of as an afterthought. And based on what I've heard in the past year and a half that I've been here, sometimes, although not, it's
we,
not the intention.
We have 3 minutes per question and answer.
But that's, I guess that's the bottom line.
Well, it's a good comment. You talk about accessibility, yeah. And I hear what you're saying. And again, that's what I'm committed to, is trying to make this place more accessible, more transparent. I mean, even as the board chair, I half the time I don't think they tell me what everything I need to know. And I have to go over to Metro and like pull answers out of everybody over here. So, no, it's an organization that has very significant structural flaws built in that are going to, it's going to take a lot of a lot of hard work to change the mindset of the way this organization is operating. But it has to, because it won't survive if it hasn't. So, go ahead.
Thank you. Doris, you're next. 3 minutes for the question and answer.
Thank you, Shannon Evans, for coming. I'm a native Washingtonian and have lived in every, lived over in every jurisdiction in the compact area. And as a blind person, I use Metro, bus, rail, and all the bus services in the area.
Yeah.
So, my concerns are, again, I appreciate your statement on accessibility, particularly ADA compliance first. Secondly, I would like to see an emphasis on continue to be given on lighting issues in stations and outside of stations, in fact, to ensure accessibility and safety. And lastly, I think I want to mention to you in the most immediate, which is the proposal to shut the rail system down at 10 p.m. on Sundays and some other adjustments in times. And I would hope very strongly that you will oppose that. It will have a devastating impact on the lives and the livelihoods of people with disabilities, of all types of disabilities, who have to travel throughout the system and to even do either work or need to do personal business and errands on Sundays. And it will affect also Metro Access riders as well, because of the alignment of the service. And lastly, if you went ahead with any kind of adjustment like that, I would ask you to consider.
You have 1 minute left, Doris.
I would ask you to consider looking at augmenting our bus system, because before there was a subway, we had a beautiful bus system, and we needed that, especially out in the burbs. So thank you very much.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you, Doris. Charlie, you're next.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and good evening. I want to say that for 6 years when I first came here to Washington, I used the subways and buses with no problems, and life was beautiful. Then I had cerebral aneurysm. That wasn't the Metro's fault. But it certainly changed my life. 59 days in the hospital, learned how to walk again, talk again, and orient myself again. I still suffer from orientation problems, and so I can get lost a couple of blocks from my house. And having said all of that, what's important for me to convey to you, I hope, is that the circumstances that we face as persons with disabilities are agitated by whatever effect that disability has upon us. And so we have to rely even more sensitively upon Metro and other conveyances to allow us to be able to have the level of independence that we can possibly have. So I'm very grateful to the system, and I also understand the problems that it's having, and I wish you every success in getting it fixed, because I know how hard that is.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Charlie. Mary Kay, you're next.
Thank you for coming.
Sure.
One of the things that has caught my attention since I've been on the committee is how we've been talking about kind of debriefing and lessons learned after some of the actual emergencies and exercises. And so I would hope there would be a continuation of communication between the jurisdictions as they were through these exercises.
Okay, thank you. That's a comment as well. Mm-hmm. Very good.
Darius?
My name is Donna Henry Bush, and I live in Ward 8. Mm-hmm. And so, as you have stated, in Ward 2, there are 15 Metro stops. Mm-hmm. You know, we're close to it in Ward 8. Mm-hmm. And I'm deeply concerned about the dependency between a bus and a rail. Mm-hmm. It's a simple thing for people that don't drive. A lot of people don't drive. A lot of people can't afford to drive. And right now, you have to catch the bus to catch the rail. Mm-hmm. And many of our people work in the service industry. Mm-hmm. And you know, you have to use the rail mm-hmm. to get to those places. They work at hotels and things like that. So I'm deeply concerned about that, and I think it would be devastating to people that live in wards 6, 5, 7, and 8. That's something like, you know, if they close at 10 o'clock.
Oh, yeah, no, you're absolutely right. Yeah.
And then my thing is, the reason I joined is, I know people are jurisdictional. And that was one of the reasons that I wanted to join this committee. But I think that the public really doesn't understand the severity of what needs to be done. And I think maybe if Metro considered working with the ANCs, sort of adopt a station or adopt a jurisdiction or adopt a bus stop or something like that, where the communities would get involved and people would really understand the severity of what's happening. And it may help generate some money, it may help generate some energy or whatever, and more understanding mm-hmm. for our citizens in all of the jurisdictions.
Yeah. No, it's a great comment, and I'll just say this too on the late night service again. It's important for people who go to the bars and restaurants and da da da, but it's more important for, as you mentioned, for the employees who can't afford Uber, who can't afford to pay a taxi cab to take them home, who need public transportation. And when we have this hearing, I hope everyone turns out and supports my efforts to keep this thing open late at night, because it is absolutely critical for our city for that to happen. So.
Thank you. Paul, you're up next.
I think most of my colleagues are going to speak on this again and again. So the big issues are the early closings, the impact we have for Metro Access, and also the concerns about the Wage Rise program that a lot of some of my colleagues have to speak more of it. That's it.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Paul. Ella, you're next.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for being here.
Let me ask you this, is any other board members showing up but me? Anybody else?
No.
No? All right. Did it have any other board members showing
yes,
up?
Yes, we've had one member, no.
Who came?
Carol.
Carol Common?
Common.
Okay, all right. Because I have said to my board members repeatedly, I want everyone to show up here at a meeting. Although I will continue to, I can't make them. I will continue to try and embarrass them. So anyway, go ahead.
Thank you, sir. There are just two topics, or briefly, I want to highlight. And one of them is the emergency exercises. How okay. important it is to continue with these
oh, sure.
emergency exercises. Howsoever, we have a situation with the waiver. So many of us want to participate fully, but because the waiver, that said that if something happened to me, I have to be responsible.
Okay.
Well, if it happened to me, so because that experience, I am not going to do it again unless there is a waiver.
Right.
But on the other hand, I also want to highlight the fact that a Metro is having those exercises for the test. For instance, recently there was a test between the 7000 series car, between the two cars, the cabin between them. And during that exercise, so many members with different low vision, and they participated, and it was a success. But here tonight we have a rider, and he fell in between these two cars, and just because his ability, he's alive tonight with us. So my point with this is that how we can implement and expand these exercises so everyone is really covered in terms of participation and get all the points needed to make this better and more effective for safety.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right, thank you.
Thank you, and sir, you're good to hear from me all the time, so I will pass and go to Denise Rush next.
All right, Denise.
Hi, my concern is the ability to ride. I think that not having a landline that we can contact is discriminatory to people who don't have smartphones, can't use them, can't afford them, and they don't even have charging cards to put the cost if we get Uber or Lyft or just an ability transportation system that uses only an app. And I want to ask you, did the RFP go out already on Friday?
Yes, it did.
It did?
Yes. Is this the RFP for Uber and Lyft?
The abilities rise, RFP went out.
Yeah, went out, right.
Okay, well, the proposal that was submitted to you did not line up with a lot of the concerns that the ANC committee had discussed, so now it's a done deal, or?
But nothing's ever a done deal, and I have to say I don't know as much about it as I probably that I need to answer your question. I know it went out, and is there anything else, Tom, that I we know?
Can you clarify all this?
Oh, okay. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, also,
Christian can kind of give us.
I'd be happy to do that, but I think that's Rush wants to finish your question, right?
Okay, go ahead.
Right.
And also, we have to make sure that when they change or cut off the metro, it's going to affect the cost. Will the calculator be able to calculate? Because that's what the metro access fare is based on. How can we be assured that the calculator can say, you know, we have a change in service, so there's going to be a change in cost?
Okay.
Thank you.
Well, Christian, let me ask you this. Sounds like that's going to be a long answer. Why don't we come back to that at the end?
Absolutely.
Because we're not going to run out of time, and I should like to hear from everybody, and we'll come back to this question at the end.
Very good. Thank you for that. Philippa, you are
next. Hi. Hello, I'm Philippa Mazzell, and I live in Ward 1, close to New Street Corridor, which also has extremely active nightlife, as
sure.
You know. My concern is, again, about the early closing for Metro. Not only the patrons who come to have a good time, they drink a little more than they should before driving, but also, as Ernie's pointed out, for the people who work there, you know, for them getting home. And also, now we're in the World Series playoffs. I've been to the Nationals games where the game was, I think, went 11, 12 innings. And that was at a time when Metro was still running. It was very comfortable to know I could get home. Now, if you're at a World Series game, playoff game, and if you go late, you got to get up and go home.
Let me comment on that really quick. Before I came here, I was notified that the game Friday will start at 5:30, so it won't have a negative impact in the evening, and the game Saturday will start at 4 o'clock. So we're good so far. But, so assuming the Nationals win, which we all know they will, the following week, then the game's still coming. Then they go back to Los Angeles, and then it's the following week, and then we'll go into the National League Championship, and that's when it starts to become a problem. Because if you get into the World Series, which I hope you will, World Series games don't start till 8 o'clock at night. So we will blow past the 11:20. So what I need everybody to do, I need the votes on, if you can influence Paul Wiedefeld to change his mind, that would be helpful. But if not, I need the votes on the board to change that policy. So I'm working on that. So let the people know how important it is that we stay open late for the World Series and the other things. Anyway, go ahead.
Very good. Thank you.
Thank you. I'll just stop there.
Okay, thank you. Susan, you're up next.
Okay, hi. Thank you so much for coming. So I know that you guys are spending a lot of money on safety and fixing things and prioritizing that, but I'm just wondering what is going on to help address any of the innate functioning of the older cars. For example, using the speaker system to be able to announce certain things that are going on. And sometimes it's working, sometimes it's not. Sometimes it's working, but you still can't hear it. Also, as an example, today, I just wish that there would be some way to announce to everybody, like, I think they're called dead cars, and the lights are off and you can't enter. For those of us who are visually impaired or blind, when you're waiting at a certain place and then the metro car stops and it ends up being a dead car, there's no warning ahead of time, and it would be nice if they could at least announce, hey, this is a 6-car train, car number 5 is a dead car, please, like, you know, find a different car to go to instead of just it arriving and not being able to get it.
On the cars, we have to replace the whole fleet. So as you know, our cars need work, and so we do try to rehabilitate them and, as you mentioned, fix the speakers if they can be done. But the whole thing is terrible. The 1000 series cars, you know, goes back to the beginnings. The 2-3s were not that good. The 5s were horrible when they bought them. You know, so the fleet's got to go. And so we're doing 12 a month right now. About 16 cars, 7000 series cars a month we're getting. You know, so whatever that multiplies out to, you know, 160, 180 a year, and we're going to keep buying until we get, the 1,200 cars replaced. So that's the answer to that. We have to do that. It takes a while, and it's going to cost us $3 billion. And then if we do get all these cars, and we want to start running 8-car trains, there's not enough power in the system to do that. We have to upgrade the system, which is going to cost us another $1.5 billion to do. So that's what I'm saying. There's a lot of money needs to be put into this system. But what's the alternative? So we need to do it. It just goes without saying. So to answer your question, we're buying cars as fast as we can, and we're trying to keep the ones we got on the track working.
Thank you, sir. Will Shelley, you next.
Hi, thank you for being here. So it was really great to have your perspective. Send your other comments.
What is perspective?
I just wanted to make a comment, and if you want to comment, that's fine. I wanted to mention this, you know, you're clearly focusing a lot on safety and a lot of the budget and everything like that, but there's a lot of budget and a lot of safety made up through the accessibility provisions that aren't really only accessibility for people with disabilities, but they want to make accessibility and usability for everybody. So, you know, I'm sure you're well aware that the elevators, are in need some assistance. A lot of times, the escalators need assistance. If those things are repaired, more people with disabilities will move off of the paratransit system and move on to the fixed rail system. Mm-hmm. If the train leveling is worked out, if the platform lighting is worked out,
right.
Where people can see where they're going, it won't feel so scary. If it's reliable, then it will be more bikes, more people with strollers using that elevators, more just more people feel comfortable going into the metro, and it will increase ridership and all of that. If you, on top of that, I wanted to just also give a quick kind of comment about the customer service. I think it was being brought up about sometimes, sometimes we blame the PA systems for not working, but I think sometimes there's just no announcement. I think we just, sometimes you sit in a tunnel and you just sit there and you have no idea what's going on at work. And the customer service not only is used for people with disabilities, but also for everyone else, including that, I saw the other day someone, tourists with bags and everything going to the ticket machine to try to get tickets and figure out how the system works. And there's just no one around. There's just no one to tell them, here's what you have to do.
So, you have less than a minute here.
So that type of customer service not only is helpful for tourists, it's helpful for people with disabilities, it's helpful for anyone who wants to use the system, so there's a system.
Well, let me just comment just quickly. You are identifying many, many of the issues that many of our riders talk about, and they're the ones we're going to get to, but we can't get to at the moment because we got all these other problems. We have trains catching fires, we got wires, we got to be fixed, tracks that are coming apart. The lighting is very important. When I start riding this thing again, I can't see that well at night, and so I go into these dark stations, I can't find my way around, I don't know where to go, drive me crazy. And so we want to increase the lighting. We want to do everything you're talking about, and we'll get there. But it's going to take us a bit to get there because we've got all these other problems that are significantly more important. So that's the system I want to have when I'm done. And I'm aware of all the problems you're talking about. And
I want to just interject. I'm sorry, sure. But I just want to say, don't wait.
I know, don't wait too long.
Yeah. We're going to get all at the same time.
I wish we could, but we're going to do the best we can. Yeah, and you read my comment in the paper, which only I as chairman of the board can say this, but you stick me on a train in a tunnel that stops for 20 minutes, I'm going to kick the door out and go off. So, you know, seriously, right? So, anyway.
Wouldn't want to advise our own people.
No, I don't advise anybody to do that, but I tell you that's what I will.
Thank you, sir. Breanne Berger, you're up next. Thank you, Will.
My name is Breanne Berger. I want to thank you for coming. I'm going to try to talk about some issues that I've not heard as much tonight, and then I'm going to go through the question. So, I'm not sure if you're aware, but Washington, D.C., the DMZ area, all the network, has a larger group population of deaf Americans in the United States, much larger than any other major city or state in the U.S., right here in the D.C. area. We are solely underrepresented on the council. I am the sole representative of the entire deaf hard of hearing, hearing loss, late deaf, you name it, older people born deaf people. I'm the only representative on this entire council. So the collective of 9 people worldwide on this council. The more people hearing loss is the number one disability in the United States. Hearing loss, okay? The line is not productive. It's lower. Wheelchair, lower. I'm the only person on this council, so it's an entire population. So, number one, Mexico, Romana needs to pay attention to the people, customers with hearing loss. That's the biggest shadow that we have. It's everything is audio, almost everything in the system of audio. We need to improve physical communication. We need to increase motivation on this council. Creating that to me is deaf and blind. So we have a staff population that has more intriguing, unique needs than just deaf and hard of hearing, hearing loss, whatever you want to put your name on it. Don't call it hearing or hear you. Okay. So, first of all, we need to increase the reputation and the attention, making sure that people with hearing loss are accommodated. Second of all, I'm going to talk about the white laws and other issues tonight. Hopefully we get some short-term issues addressed while we try to increase technology accessibility on the metro. Now I'm going to talk about my closing questions. So I'm maybe a bunch of wondering, is there a possibility that WMATA can do some kind of contract with a cell phone company? Not the filtering company, pay you guys millions of dollars to install cell phone service in the tunnel. Can the lighting company like Philip come in and install lights at all the stations and then put their name on it, marketing, and the people advertising in the elevator, pay them to increase revenue that way so they can afford to fix all the problems?
The answer is yes. And on the cell phone, actually no on the cell phones. A long time ago, there was this idea that they were going to pay to install the cell phones. They're not doing that now, but Metro's paying to get cell phone service throughout the system, and we will get that done. On the other part, though, there are advertising companies, et cetera, who are interested in coming into our system. And you will see, as long as I'm board chair, we are going to move in that direction where you're going to see changes in that regard to lighting, advertising, things of that nature that can not only generate money, but make the stations more hospitable, more exciting, more lively than the ones that we have. So.
Thank you, sir. Randy Pope, you're up next.
Hello, I'm Randall Pope, and I first want to thank you for joining us this evening. I know your time is valuable, so we truly appreciate it. I'm sure you're a busy person with much to do. A lot of different projects going on with the City Council, so we do appreciate your time.
I'm here as a representative for the deafblind community. And the greatest problem we have is accessing information. So as Brianne was just saying, accessing information for people who don't hear is critical. When that information is shared auditorily, it is accessible for people with hearing loss. So for trains to have visual displays, that accommodates deaf people, but not people who are deaf and blind. So there are other options. There's writing notes, there's using whiteboards, different kinds of options that work for some populations and not with others. I have used Metro Rail, bus services, and so forth fairly independently. I've learned the system and I'm able to go pretty much where I want. But my hope is that for the deafblind community to be involved with Metro Access, as well as options such as Uber. So if there can be a contract in place between WMATA and companies like Uber, because communication is in place in many instances with servicing like that with Uber. Uber hires many deaf drivers, and I know that deafblind people are very excited about the opportunities that companies like Uber provides, because there's greater communication with that option than with the standard Metro option. So, again, appreciate your time and being here with us tonight.
Okay, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Thank you, Randy. Ed, you're up next.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, my name is Ed McAtee. I'm Fairfax County, and this question may not make much of anything, but I know when the silver mine was introduced, I understand that it affected some scheduling, delays in scheduling on the Virginia side. There was talk about building an extra tunnel. I was wondering whether that's included in any of the budget.
Yes, what's being referred to is the Roslyn bottleneck. And essentially what that means is there are two ways of getting from Virginia into the district. One is the bridge, we call it the Yellow Line Bridge, which is down more towards Alexandria, and the other way is the tunnel that comes across the river at Roslyn. The tunnel can, as you kind of rough numbers, handle something like 26 trains an hour to get into the district. As you extend the Silver Line out to Dulles and beyond, you are going to have a larger number of trains trying to get through that tunnel. So the end result, and they've known this for years, is you need another tunnel in order to address the capacity issues and get the trains into the city. A new tunnel costs somewhere in the vicinity of $3.5 billion. They have not even begun planning it. I raised this with the Northern Virginia Transportation Authority, with the governors, with everybody, that at some point you can no longer ignore the fact that you are going to need another tunnel. And actually the big meeting they had out there, they identified two transportation issues that were critical. One was the New American Legion Bridge, and the other was the Roslyn Tunnel. So someday, at some point, we are going to address that issue. But at the moment, the needs are more pressing in some other areas, but I have not forgotten about it, and I will. And when you talk about tunnels, the other tunnel we need to fix is the Red Line tunnel between Cleveland Park and Medical Center, which leaks and looks like the Luray Caverns, and does it so crazy. But we have to, the construction was faulty back in the 60s, and it has to be encased. The whole tunnel has to be encased, and that's another $1.5 to $2 billion item. So,
we've
got a lot of work to do.
Thank you, sir. Marissa, you're up next.
My name is Marissa. Thank you so much for coming tonight. I just want to reiterate how important it is to continue to make the rail system as accessible for everybody as possible. Now, I love using the rail, however, I'm not using the rail when I don't have an able-bodied person to go with me. The reason I'm not used to that is because I have an able person
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Our last speaker tonight is going to be Stephen. Stephen, you're our last speaker. I want to let the audience know that the board chair does have to leave. So I want to thank you for your time.
Thank you. I enjoy your guidance, Stephen, and I'll finish up.
But not least.
Yes, Steve, so you're last but not least.
Thank you for that. Stephen Caffin, I live at DuPont Circle.
Yep.
You know, I have a list of things, but instead I'm going to just ask two questions.
Okay.
But the first statement is, you know, the reason for skepticism, you know, throughout is that I think Metro's credibility has been spent over time, and so I think the outreach that you have been making and are making today is very important.
Yep.
Yes, thank you. The two questions, I'll do them back to back. To compensate for the possible rail curtailment that might occur in terms of late night and maybe even morning, why not consider running buses daily over at least the major portion of some of the trains?
We are. That's all part of the study.
Absolutely.
I requested that as part of the hearing that we run buses everywhere the rail goes. Just follow the rail line. How much will it cost? What would it take to do that?
Okay. And it doesn't even have to be to the end. I mean,
I know you're saying, but as much as I don't want to stop the rail, I want that as an option so we know what it is.
And in fact, over time, maybe in 5 or 10 years, this becoming a 24-hour city, that might even
occur daily. Yeah.
And the second question is, how is employee morale, which certainly affects customer service, being stabilized, given the frustrations which the loyal employees, many of which are very long-term, must feel when they deal with, on a constant basis, the frustrations of the customers in the system at this time?
I've taken upon myself to talk to as many employees as I can. So this summer, on July 30th, we had a meeting at a church over in Capitol Hill. We had 2,500 of our employees came on Saturday afternoon. And I listened to everybody for 2 hours, and this is what I took away, and then I spoke to everybody to encourage them you know, to do the best they can, and that we are listening, and we do appreciate them. But the employees essentially were saying, number one, nobody appreciates us, and number two, we know more about the system than anybody. Why doesn't anybody ask us for our opinion? And so those were really two very important things, and I took that back to the board, to the general manager, to everybody, and said, you know, if we want our employees to be a part of this, we have to appreciate them and we have to listen to them. And so I'm trying to change that culture of making sure the employees are part of our system, because they are. And again, I dealt with this before in the district back in the mid-90s when we had a similar situation. And we were able to turn that around, to engage our employees to do better and to feel appreciated, and it can't happen. And we have 13,000 employees in the system, and my job and Paul's job is to make sure that the system works. And so we will continue to do that. Yeah, I'm running real late, but I wanted to stay and listen to everything you had to say.
Thank you very much, sir.
I want to appreciate all of your comments, and I take them to heart. And I'm with you on this. I am furious. I'm outraged at what happened here. And I'm going to stay on it until we get it fixed. And I want it to work for everybody, particularly people like yourselves and others who talk about Metro has to be accessible to everybody. And we're going to make it that way. And we're going to go into your comments. I'm not going to stop until I get the escalators work, or the elevators work, until it's lighter, until it's brighter, until it's an inviting place. I had an opportunity this past summer, to go to Beijing, to Shanghai, places, to Hong Kong. And granted, they pour mountains of money into these systems, and the government runs them. But they're gorgeous. They're what we aspire to be, and can be, if we have better technology than they do. And so we just have to invest in our public transportation. As Americans, invest in public transportation. It's important. And that's what my goal is. And when Hillary Clinton, my candidate, gets elected, I've already talked to her about it. She has got to, you know, really dedicate billions of dollars in this country to public transportation for all of us. That's my goal. So anyway, thank you very much, and I'm going to make sure my colleagues on the board come by at every meeting you have. I want one of my board members here.
Excellent. Thank you. Thank you very much for your time and your support. Appreciate that a lot. Okay, I'm going to jump back if I can now to public comment period. The last speaker we had, sir, you were
David.
Thank you. David, you were speaking about the between car door barriers. And which cars?
Yes, the new series. I think there's 7,000 series. Yes, exactly. I mean, I was at the end, the second, between the second to the last train. So I don't know if there's a difference.
Mr. Price, could you perhaps talk to David? I'd like to get more information on this.
Yeah, I have spoken with him. Sorry, I do appreciate the time that you had on an email and a phone call, but I still would like to speak more. And also, if there is any videotape from the Grosvenor Metro, I definitely want to make sure I have that available to me, too.
Okay. George, wait a minute. Mr. Blake, will you?
Mr. Blake is
in the
room. Why
didn't you
hear?
Mr. Blake?
Yes, we wait to respond to the comment that was being made.
Good. I'll let you speak first, and then George, will you be recognized? Go ahead.
Okay. So, if you all recall, last month at this meeting, I mentioned that Metro had been studying the 7,000 series barriers for quite some time. And I said that this month meeting, we may have an update of what we found. And again, this has been months of study. We've done independent hazard analysis, and then of course six members of the disability community, including four from the AAC, took part in a on-site real live demonstration of the detectability of the 7,000 series of barriers. And while our hazard analysis, again, independent study hazard analysis, proved that the barriers were safe, while the demonstration at the Greenbelt Station proved to show that they were detectable, we heard the participants there. We've done our own internal review of the new car barriers that were part of the 7,000 series design approved back in 2008, and that this committee looked at as part of the overall 7,000 series design. But we've made the decision, Metro has made the decision, that to avoid confusion of having two types of barriers on an 8-car train, and to help customers as we move to these new train cars be familiar with the barriers just as they were with all the 1,000 through 6,000 series cars, we're going to retrofit all of the current 7,000 series cars with the traditional chain barriers that everyone is familiar with. And every car that's still being manufactured, you heard the board chairman speak about us receiving 12 cars a month. Those cars are now being held up just slightly so that they can be redesigned to include the new chain barriers. So that's the overall, and that's again months of work of study and review. And to Mr. Kasuba, you know, we have spoken and been in communication. At this point, we are awaiting further investigation by our safety team, because that's your situation is very scary statement. I mean, I've heard it, and we've been looking into it, so there'll be further communication from Metro, but not from a policy standpoint. Now this is much more into following up as an investigation with the situation that you've stated. So
thank you.
The communication will continue, but in terms of the barriers themselves, Metro has made the decision to retrofit our trains with the traditional train barriers.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Blake. And I'd like to be able to follow up with this, particularly to bus and rail, so we don't lose this train of thought. Doris, I'm sorry. You...
Actually, my motion, Mr. Chair, was something that you may have just done, but my motion was in recognition of the good work that Mr. Blake is doing on this, and I do sincerely do that, I would like to that this be a regular agenda item at least in the immediate for the bus and rail committee and any recommendations come up to us.
Absolutely. Thank you, Doris. I don't believe we need to have a motion on that. I think this is sufficiently of interest that I think we want to, bus rail does want to follow up on that. So
maybe we'll make sure. Parts of the bus rail.
Right. We'll follow up on that. Mr. Blake, I appreciate your report. David, thank you very much for that.
Thank you.
Very good. Our next speaker.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, we have another from the public. It's Ms. It's Ms. Stephanie.
Well,
Darnese?
Yes.
We are actually looking for the public here.
Well, I'm a public person.
Okay, go ahead, Darnese.
I just have a statement for consideration. As a Metro Access rider, DC to DC, I'm just concerned about how the prices are tabulated. Because when you go to DC to Maryland and Maryland to Virginia and all that, most people in DC, from DC to DC, are charged a maximum $6.50 and $6 just to go not get the car distance. And I just want to know why that is, and you can pay the same amount and go all the way to Chancellor from DC.
Okay.
How do I try to just
explain that. Can we cover that in the Metro Access Subcommittee? Because I think we also want to talk about how the fares are going to be adjusted under the...
That would be under the fare calculator policy. I'm sure the one will take
right. And so we also want to cover Denise's question regarding how fares will be adjusted under safe track. So if we could cover both of those under that same time frame, that would be great. Thank you. Our next speaker,
Michelle. Michelle.
My name is Michelle, and I'm here to speak on behalf of my mother, Jean Clark 74, which also rides Metro Access. My mother has a host of chronic illnesses, and we've been trying to work with Metro Access for the last 2 years now, and it's just not working well. I'm on family medical, and I try to use Metro Access to help me out with their trips. Sometimes my mom can have like 4 trips in 1 week. So a lot of times we're experiencing that they're showing up late for the appointments, so that gets her to her destination late. When it's time to pick her up, she's no longer in her window, so they leave her. Now she has to call Metro Access and book another ride, which takes another hour for them to come pick her up. Also, the drivers, I feel as though that we need to have some sort of plan in place to give them more training. They're insensitive, they have no compassion. When it's dealing with the elderly and the disabled, my mom calls me from time to time upset, and I have to get upset. I can't do my job, and I don't think it's fair. I think these people deserve more. So I just want somebody to look into that for me.
Michelle, thank you. I'm going to ask a question here. Can we flag Michelle's mom's trips and see what's going on here?
Mr. Chair, absolutely. I can hear the passion, the frustration in your voice from hearing this. You should not have to endure this. I take it personal to hear these type of comments, and I'll make sure that me and my team definitely address this with you. But
could you get with Michelle before she leaves tonight? Let's get some more information on that. Absolutely. I'm going to put a request and also for an individual, Christina Weymouth. I believe you probably have her information. She's been having a difficult time very much the same way. I'd like to make sure her trips are flagged also.
Yes, sir.
Okay, I've got a letter on that. I think I sent that off to you already. So I think you already have that request. Thank you. Michelle, thank you very much for that. Thanks, Sherwin.
Thank you.
make sure we discuss, get to Michelle before the end of the meeting. I appreciate that. Thank you.
Yes, the next one is Carol Tyson.
Hi, everybody. Good evening. I don't have it written down, so it's going to be off the top of my head. I was really glad to hear you all talk about the early closures with the chair, Chair Evans, and wanted to just flag that there will be public hearings, and I have seen in the press that some of the board members are really excited about WMATA partnering with Uber or Lyft. If there's late night closures, and I just wanted to suggest that if that were to happen, that the same standards that are going to be put in place for Abilities Ride also hold for any late night closure partnerships. And so that's the first thing. And I won't be here, so I hope people will say that. And then the second one is just to say thank you to all of you for your strong advocacy around Abilities Ride. I think it's made a really big difference. And I've only skimmed the proposal, or not the proposal, but the RFP. It's quite long. But I am really actually pleased with some of the things that made it in, including requirements for ADA compliance, which is a really big deal. So thank you to all of you. On that, I wanted to ask, I noticed there are requirements for training in there, and something that's missing that I think is under the ADA is requirements for drivers who know how to tie down a wheelchair, and that's not listed in this, or there's specifics under training, but that's not in there, and I wanted to know if that is included. And then also, if folks haven't seen it yet, there are requirements for the companies to have wheelchair accessible vehicles, but it's not clear how many they need to have, and I wondered if there's going to be a requirement for equivalency. So equivalent wait times or any of those sorts of things. So thank you again to all of you, to the members for doing such a wonderful job.
Thank you, Carol. Let me just say this to Carol from ABC. I am very well acquainted with the amount of work that you put into this effort too. So you deserve as much credit, and I know you'll be watching the entire process going forward just like we are. So thank you for your work and the efforts and the team that you put together. Very good. Bill Orleans, you're up next, and then followed by Heidi Case, and our last speaker.
I believe we are all anxiously awaiting, looking forward to the pre-bid conference. So I don't know if the date's been announced yet. I haven't heard it. Where we come and maybe ask questions about the deficiencies, some of us may leave still in this within the ability of our proposal, which I also have not seen. But a predicate of that proposal was the success, or alleged success, of the POD project in Montgomery County, which was completed 2 years ago. And to this date, no analysis as to its success or otherwise has been publicly released. Also a predicate is the success of Transport DC, which we know it's been a success because now PDOT has cut back on its budget, and a lot of people who were formerly taking Transport DC for various purposes cannot do so now. And as Mr. Kent has explained, that's not WMATA's responsibility. So while WMATA will be funding the entities that will be participating, winning a bid to participate in Ability Drive, if it becomes a success, more so than WMATA's budgeted to contribute to, what do we do then? So I've asked publicly, several times now, I'm asking again, some analysis of the Montgomery pilot and some analysis of the Transport DC should be provided to the public before any contract is issued with regard to Maryland Building. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Bill. Heidi?
Hi. I would like to speak for a second about Transport DC. One, to say that advocacy works, because we have really made a difference. We have gotten all the restrictions related to location and some of those things. Our advocacy rolled all of them back. And effective Saturday, the 1st through the 15th, we can go anywhere we want. And the 16th through the 30th, and this is a funding issue, it goes back to serving only medical, employment, and volunteer job, I mean, volunteer type of work. But I disagree that WMATA has not had anything to do with the funding issue. The first 2 years, WMATA incentivized transport, I mean, DC, to run this program by giving them credits against their metro access subsidy that they're required to pay. And the more trips they ran, the lower their metro access subsidy went. For last year, and I wish Mr. Evans was still here, so the WMATA said they saved $5 million. Their subsidy would have been, because it's divided 60% Maryland, 25% DC, and 15% Virginia of the metro access budget. So last year they saved that $5 million, but they changed the MOU after the first 2 years. So they are no longer going to, all they're going to give them this year is 2% off their 25% subsidy. I know this is very technical, but so they would have had to pay 25%. Instead, they're going to pay 23%. So if the budget, I've run the numbers, as many of you know I'm into doing, and Mr. Kent's smiling happily. And so if the budget was the same last year as this year, DC will only save $2.3 million. So that's a great, and so we have sent, also we have not heard back from this, a letter to the mayor with 28 organizations signing on, many of them national disability organizations from the American Association with Disabilities, Paralyzed Veterans, all of the big organizations, senior organizations, requesting more money. But, so, you know, Metro did have an impact on how much money DC has available to put into Transport DC. And my question, similar to Bill's, is what happened for people's lives is they got a new freedom they never had. They woke up today and they could think about what they wanted to do today, not have to worry about tomorrow. They could have somebody call and say, hey, you want to do this? And they would say yes, right then. And it was really difficult for people when there was that sudden cutting of that program. So I know I'm running out of time to be standing here. But so what are you going to do to ensure that that similar kind of thing doesn't happen for Abilities Ride? Because there is suppressed demand for transportation for people with disabilities that is similar to what everybody else does. On demand, when they need it, not only accessible, but financially accessible too.
Thank you. A lot to think about there, and we appreciate your advocacy on behalf of Transport DC. I'm going to recognize Jim Hughes next. Jim, you've been here the entire meeting. We appreciate the fact that you've listened to all of us. You're up next. Thank you, sir. Could we turn off our cell phones, please?
Not mine.
It could have been mine. I think I still have mine, it just hasn't run yet.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Jim Hughes. I'm the Managing Director of Rail Transportation, and got a chance to come to you this evening and give you an update as to where we are in terms of dealing with, communicating with customers who are part of their deaf. And the concept you've heard over and over again is wait pools. And so we've had a couple of meetings with both Brianna and Patrick to understand what the needs are and also to understand how we can do things better than we're doing today. And we're in the middle of a process, so this is an update, but I think it's timely. There's a couple things that came up as we met with Patrick and Brianna that we heard, and I think that they heard from us. there's some long-term stuff we've been talking about, improvements to kids, e-alerts, our plan, we how do we do all that, but we weren't necessarily paying attention to people with hearing problems when we're having an emergency, or how we deal with it from day to day. Yeah. And so, what we heard was a suggestion to that we, a command that we do better, a suggestion that one of the ways to do that is to use a whiteboard. So if there's an emergency, the concept is to have a pad that people on platform station managers can write something that says, there's a train delay, so people can hold it up on people so that they can see it, and not have to worry about announcements or walking up and down the platform. As we thought about that and tried to figure out how we can do that as a group, we've come up with some ideas that I think make it a little better. So I'd like to talk about it. Instead of just having a whiteboard, we do a whiteboard, one of our problems is I've got 615 station managers that would have to learn how to do that, and some of their writing is no better than mine. And so to use that on a whiteboard at a time of an emergency would be very difficult. So kind of transpose that into, well, what if, in addition to the whiteboard, we gave them like metallic stick-ons that says, that would already be pre-printed for them. It says, emergency, station is closing, please evacuate immediately, follow directions. Or train delays, expect delays in both directions, please wait on this platform for the next available train. So that when these types of normal emergencies happen, it can be easily communicated. I'm not relying on individuals writing down exactly what it is. So we've developed, I think, 6 standard ones that they can use. And we're circulating those comments. We also still have a whiteboard, so if something unusual happens, there's the ability to do that. We're not taking that away from them, but we think it would be an improvement if we helped them communicate. In addition, in our conversations, we explained a tool that we that our station managers already have, which is a pad of paper, and it's pre-printed. It's called the Metro Will Get You Around Town. And it lists board train, boarded at, and gives some options, trains going. So a customer from out of town came to our station manager and said, I'm here at Gallery Place and I'm trying to get to National Airport. How do I get there? Station managers actually have a document. It's not very big, we can improve it, do some things with it, but they have a document that says, you're here and they can circle you're at Gallery Place. Take a train to Metro Center. Red line, and it says transfer to the red line in the direct, transfer to a direction of where you're going. This is my example, I'm sorry. Go to the train towards Glenmont, and then get off at the station you want to go, and then rip it off and give it to them. It gives the station manager the ability to hand something to the customer that they can take with them. It says, all here, my first trip goes to there, I transfer to there, and goes to there. Now, we've had this for a few years in our stations. Our service station attendants aren't using them like they should be, so we're getting them to use them the way they should be. We're making it bigger. We're making it to a pad 5 inches by 4 inches, and we want to make it 8.5 by 11. Put a map on it, they can circle things on the map, the back of the plane, so they can write directions if they wanted to on the back of it. Customer could write on it. So this is one of the ideas that came up in our discussion. We thought that would be helpful, and we're moving towards making that happen. The third thing that came up on our discussion, and the most difficult for the moment for us, is to have these boards, call them whiteboards, on the platforms themselves. So there would be something down on the platform, and we could use our pre-printed signs, magnetized signs, stick them right up there, it says emergency, station is closing, please evacuate, or we're single tracking, please go to the platform on the other side. Problem with that is, there's no problem with it, we have to design it. Stations are different. All the place, where do we put them, how do we get the person to do that in. But there's a need. What we've learned is that there's a real need to get that information onto the platform as opposed to where the station managers are. That's for people with hearing problems, so they can't hear the announcements even when they work. They may not see the pins. when they work. So I'll be like the chairman here. But so we're working on that. We haven't designed yet. Our engineering department is working with us to see what we come up with quickly, how we would do that, how we would staff it, what would it cost. But that's sort of a third in the process that we're dealing with in terms of what we've heard from both Brianna and Patrick and the rest of this committee. So I said to Patrick, we've come today and give you an update. I think I'm scheduled to come back to the bus rail subcommittee. I did forget one thing. When we talked about the whiteboard, we talked about it would also be useful to our bus supervisors, so that when we're doing a bus show, we're leading people around, the bus supervisors can do the same thing. This is a shuttle to Newport, and this is a shuttle to wherever we're running. So we've involved them also. So I think I'm coming back sometime next month, Patrick. I just came over to give an update.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's good. And thank you very much for that overview. We appreciate that and appreciate your support. Brianna, you're up to speak on this. This is actually, you need to be the one to take credit for this, because this is something you've seen from the beginning. Go ahead, then.
Thank you, Patrick. I really appreciate your support as well. So, you were asked on the last meeting, but I just want to update you that they, your sister, I don't remember his name, that's what you remember the name of the man who bought all the station?
Donald Long.
Mr. Gomes? Donald
yes.
Gomes?
So, he came from a meeting and he already developed a paper.8x11 5 and on one side is what you were talking about, the get around town, and that's on the right side, the left side of the paper, on the right side of the paper he blew up some icons, so they're basic pictures, which was an excellent idea on behalf of Metro. We were very impressed that Metro came up with that concept, but a great for foreign prisoners, a lot of people who are not literate, basically, so they could just point at the picture, and the picture looks like, you know, the airport, restroom, very environmental. For me, here, it's like attraction and need. So again, you have to see, then on the back, one side was the mental map, so you also have that visual as well. And then there's a blank space for being able to write on it. The other thing that we were considering for the whiteboard is that the whiteboard size will be 8x11 as well. And those signs that need to be holding up for 8x11. And so we need to figure out a way to keep those signs with the whiteboard so they don't get lost or, you know, get separated. So that's one of the things that we're looking at. Currently, the other thing that we emphasized in that meeting, follow-up meeting, was that Metro has taken great strides in improving visual communication at the Metro team level, or even command. You know, we have those kiosks, TV, you know, our signs, and the kiosks, we can command. Those are great, but the greatest problem that we're trying to address is for people who are already in the system, they already are traveling around on the second platform, they don't know what's going on upstairs. So that's where we're trying to address that communication, physical communication. In the short term, until technology is approved with the kids, healers, cell phones that are down the tunnel, because now right now, there's no cell phones that are in the tunnel. So if you're in the tunnel, you're out of luck, you don't know what's going on. So that's where we decided that the priority is trying to improve that visual communication on the platform level, and then the legacy level, which technology also needs to be approved for the emergency level to come from the delay, the time delay. You know, the ear runners and the key on TV sometimes it takes a while before the new finally comes up. We're not even having an hour of that. So, but in the meantime, there's a short-term solution of home, mental health, and technology. I think we'll agree on that. And also, the whiteboard can be used for communication between appoint myself, Lloydie, and customers who all got to a park hearing, or give out the board name or speaker. So that's where we're trying to go with that. Technology, affordable, and as a short-term solution, is for communication with the active and the present lack of that to now. But, I mean, I understand people on the council that could learn self out both audio and visual. I really want to emphasize that at least we're going somewhere. So please don't be negative about this. I'm really trying to make it through the visual communication when we haven't had that for so many years. So thank you so much for hearing us out and making us really.
Thank you for bringing it to us and being as much an advocate for it as you are.
Thank you, Brianna. You basically covered all the points I was wanting to make, so very nicely done.
Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Oh, Randy, I'm sorry. You're next up.
I'm representing the deafblind community. And accessibility and accessing information is a big issue for us. We have a lot of writers that are low vision who can read print on a white screen, a white background. It's not thick black markers used. But we also need information within the rail cars. And technology can help with that and making things much more accessible within the rail cars. But we hope that accessibility does continue to improve. And increasing the use of technology so that writers can have access to information, including the use of Braille, so a more low-tech option.
Sorry.
A lot of deaf-blind individuals are unable to communicate with hearing individuals, and so they would rely on Braille. So we look forward to seeing those future changes. Thank you.
Thank you. And I just want to remind, if we can, Larry, I'm going to go to you, and then Doris, you'll be the last speaker on this topic. We have 3 minutes for question and answer, so we need to make them concise. Thank you. Thank you, Randy.
I'm going to display my ignorance in this case, but thinking in terms of the platform, is there any, from just service delay information, is there any reason why the actual departure boards and the platform could be used to display emergency information?
The passenger information displays on the platform aren't really set up to do that. They're mostly pre-programmed about the message, whether it's elevator outages or even the next train announcement is pretty much pre-programmed, and if there's an emergency, there are a series of signage that's programmed in them that we can put in there. Train delay, expect delays, single tracking notices are in there, but they're not specific for station. And they're also, as we learned, they're helpful to a lot of people, but they're not helpful to people who have a hearing problem or a sight problem, because they can't see it. So we're trying to be able to do more for everybody. The PIDs themselves, the passenger information display system, is an old system, antiquated. It took us 4 or 5 months to get green number 8 so you can figure out what the 8-car train is. Trying to get it more interactive will probably take years. We really need a new system. One of Mr. Evans' things, he'll spend more millions of dollars for communications. It's on that list, but until then, we're going to have to deal with what we deal with. That's one of the reasons we're looking for a low-tech thing that could help at this time.
Thank you, Jim. You're exactly right. And one of the things I brought up, Larry, quickly was when we're developing new technologies, we want to make sure that we're taking the needs of the deaf community, hearing impaired community into consideration. So that becomes a requirement for new systems coming in. But we need a short-term fix for the, in terms of long-term wins. Doris, you're up next.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I wanted to remark, because I am a deafblind person, I don't know that Brianna knows that, or Brianna, but I am. And I had written an email to everyone earlier, which you may not have gotten, with some suggestions for text on the signs, because I think they, depending on whether they are at the mezzanine level or whether they are at the track level, you need to be a bit more descriptive. For example, rather than saying, take the train on the opposite side, okay, I think you need either need to say left or right, or take the train on the outbound or inbound side or something. I mean, what we could work on that. The other thing is for people with hearing impairments who also have vision impairments, again, the idea that those signs need to be both in a large print format, so maybe even larger than 8.5 by 11 up to 11 by 17 or something, and that perhaps they should be using a reverse and the symbol so that one could tell the difference, the symbol for hearing impairment, and there is a specific symbol versus the general access symbol. So some of those things, but what I'd like is that I hope this will be a more in-depth and continuing discussion on the way to implementation very soon at the bus rail committee.
Thank you, Doris. That's exactly where we're going to have the updates come to bus rail. So your signage questions and answers, suggestions, of course, will be vetted through that committee. Brandy, I'm going to give you the last word. I know this is the second time it's over. We've got two more reports, and I have to end this meeting at 7:30. Go ahead, sir, quickly, if we can.
And just to be brief, we have noticed that there are more hard of hearing deaf individuals, more language speakers that are accessing the metro. And deaf and hard of hearing, people who speak Spanish. So we do recognize that we do have foreign language users, a lot of them are Latino within the community. And so that's just another complicating factor for you to challenge.
Thank you. We will take that into account, and I do appreciate the opportunity to come here this evening.
Thank you. Thank you, Jim. Thank you. We appreciate the updates that you'll give us, too. Randy, thank you for that. We wouldn't like it if it was easy. Appreciate your suggestions, and want to incorporate those into this upcoming solutions. Thank you. I think next on my agenda is the Metro Access. So, Paul, I'm going to hijack your report. Because there were a couple of questions that came up to Chairman Evans, and I'd like to see those addressed. Particularly, Denise, you had one concerning the RFP that came out. Bill Ordonez had a question on when the pre-bid conference is going to be.
The pre-bid conference, according to what I see, is
October 13th.
So let me clarify that, yes, that was at the presentation of the pre-bid conference will actually be on October 14th. Friday, and it will be at the board.
Okay. So, and who is eligible to come to the pre-bid conference?
Open to the public.
Open to the public. Good. All right. You'll be on it.
10 a.m.
You'll send that out?
No. Yes, we will.
Thank you. Okay. All right. Very good. I'm jumping to things quickly. A discussion on the fare calculator, how fares are calculated, and particularly to Darnese, your question regarding why fares are $6.50, almost the match from point to point in DC. Yeah. Interesting question. I don't have an answer.
Ms. Anderson wants to calculate it. since you've done it many times before.
And if we can follow that up with the policy for, which is where Denise went, the policy for what happens when you have system outages and the calculation of metro access credit during that time period.
And I think also Denise had a question that wants a response to Mr. King to be available to do that, that would be so appreciated to release this topic.
What was that question, Paul?
When Denise made a comment, and Mr. Kim was supposed to comment after, but that was never addressed.
The brief. Okay. No. Why don't we tackle the first two first?
Okay. Good evening, everyone. To answer Ms. Bush's question regarding the fare calculation, again, the fare is calculated based upon the fixed route, double the fixed route equivalent with a cap of $650. Now, as it relates to fares going to DC to DC trips, again, it's based on the fastest route option. So if that fastest route option is a combination of a bus and rail component, more than likely it is a probability, higher probability, that that fare is going to be nearing that 650 mark, depending on, again, where you're traversing throughout the district. But that's basically, in a simplified terms, how the fare calculation works on metro access.
So, Darnese, to jump in, do you have some times that we could check to make sure that the calculations of the fare calculator are correct? Could you supply that? Okay, I would very much like to see that supplied, because to me, your point, having a maximum fare of 650, doesn't make sense. So if you could supply that, and we could run those numbers and see if they come up to 650, that would be great.
All right, because I can give you an example. Usually when I leave this meeting, it's 650 for me to go home most of the time. And why is it 650 some days, 580 some days, and some days it's $6?
So if you could give us those times and the distance and that sort of thing, we could run the numbers. Because I agree with you. I don't know if Mr. Kent is here. Okay. Mr. Kent, there's a policy regarding, hang on, there's a policy regarding when you have a system outage and the calculation of bus versus the bus rail. Can you give us that, what that policy is?
We've been asked a few times, Mr. Chair, whether or not the fare calculator would adjust for times when the rail system is not running as advertised, and whether or not the metro access fare would update. Is that the question?
Yes,
that is the question.
Darnese says no.
No, I'm sorry. No, that was not Darnese's question. Hang on. May I say, that was not Darnese's question. Hers just had to do with the basic fare calculator policy. Denise's question was...
So Darnese wants to know whether it works, period.
Right.
And Denise wants to know whether or not it adjusts for conditions.
Exactly.
Let me just say that it adjusts as long as the trip planner adjusts. If it is so spontaneous a problem, like, oops, it just happened this afternoon, the system trip planner doesn't update like that. If it is a planned outage, something that's known about in advance, where they can update the schedules and update the trip planner, then the fare calculator will use the updated trip planner information to adjust the fare. So, I mean, it's to the best of our ability, and obviously if it's something that happens spontaneously that we didn't know about, you know, we're not able to update the trip planner in real time.
So
we are able to do it in advance.
Is there a way, so the question is, I think, is it happening? So is there a way for us to test it to make sure that what we're thinking is happening is actually happening.
Well, I mean, when you say us, I mean, I think...
Us, I guess, WMATA.
If, you know, I mean, now we have one 508 expert on the AAC. We've known for a really long time who probably could read the report and give an expert opinion to the committee. And his name is Patrick Sheehan. He probably could do something like that. And again, this is the first time, everybody, I hope you all noticed that where the staff is actually giving the homework assignment to the chair. It never happens here in AAC, so you gotta write this thing down. But I think that we could very easily provide the technical background documentation for how it works and who it is that would test this system is on Mr. June's staff. You know, we've done this sort of demonstration for the Metro Access Subcommittee before because the esteemed Mr. Semelfort has been a friendly but consistent skeptic who has asked us to demonstrate this in the past. I think Ms. Bush has joined the ranks. And I don't think there's any problem with our providing that. So the answer is yes, we can do it.
Good. And I think there's hours coming up on the red line, which would afford actually that kind of ability to do some calculations on that side.
Yes.
Okay. Charlie?
Yes.
You're hired.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you're hired to help me out. I'm in the suit, so are you. Okay. Very good.
Mr. Chairman.
Hang on, Doris. Wait a minute. Just.
I'm Mr. Chairman.
Hang on, Doris. Just trying to remember something here. Denise, you had this question. I believe you had one other question for Mr. Kent.
Well, it's not
on the
microphone.
A comment then.
It's, I guess, a comment or a question. The RFP went out, and it didn't include or request for service other than app service for people who do not have smartphones, charge cards to charge, and the ability and knowledge about that. So,
and I think one thing you said was the ability to use landlines to make your trip to Denise. Can you speak to that, Mr. Campbell?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to make sure that I had my security blanket, Mr. Blake, sitting next to me. In the event of Mr. Semelfort has my board presentation on his tablet. So what we're seeing now is a fact-checking, apparently, that's going on as I begin my comments. So, Denise, you're talking about the phone option?
Yeah.
Okay, all right. Now, one of the things that has happened repeatedly when we talk about this subject is that the committee, some members of the committee are concerned that if we do not say in that document, thou shalt have phones, that we're not going to have phones. Okay. I can only ask you to indulge us that the reason why the document is worded the way it is because of the fact that we want these companies to demonstrate to us what is possible, what their best recommendation is to this system. In the document, and also at the pre-bid conference, when we talk to these vendors, we're going to make it very clear, and I think this would be the part the committee is most interested in, is we're going to be very clear on who the customers are that this company's ride is meant to serve. And that includes a discussion of, okay, well, this is the profile of the customer. The customer is definitely going to have a disability.
That's a kid. Excuse me, I don't want to cut you off because we have other reports. It's a yes or a no. I understand you will explain and whatever happens at the pre-crown conference. The question is a yes or a no question. Could I get a yes or a no, please, if we could move on? No, thank you.
Let me ask another question. The fact that you don't explicitly state that this is a, this is a requirement, hang on, this is important. The fact that you don't explicitly state that this is a requirement does not mean that the vendors could not put that in their proposal going forward. But I think in most bids, what we see is a minimum requirement, which means that the vendors can exceed that requirement, correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. So I think that's important for the committee to understand, is that what we're looking at here are the minimum requirements. A vendor who proposes, let's say, landline service, this, that, and the other, all the other requirements that we put forward, I would imagine would get more credit, particularly if they're cost-effective, than someone else who just bids the minimum.
That's correct.
Because I would imagine what we're looking at here is something called best value. And so going forward, that would mean that we're going to take the solution that's going to work best for the customer, in our case. All right.
Please, Mr. Chair.
Charlie, I need to jump. We've got bus rail hearings coming up. Go ahead, sir, quickly.
I just want to say that a minimum requirement in an RFP gives the potential vendor the opportunity to say, we didn't require it, so I'm not doing it.
Right. They didn't. Well, let's, I have not read the RFP, Charlie, so I can't speak to that.
Mr. Chair, if I may, I just want to add one more point. You know, and I mean no disrespect to anyone, but you know, I think that to reduce my answer on this subject to a yes or no basically answers your question.
But that's all I asked was a question. I asked it. I mean,
it's just real, I understand that, but if I may, what I'm saying to you is you all have asked us this question many times since we've been vetting this over many months. Are you or are you not going to make mandatory every recommendation that the AAC has put forward? And we have repeatedly said that when we put issues out to bid, that in order for us to get the responses to be as broad as we need them to be to make the best decision for Metro, we aren't going to be able to do that. And the concern I have is that I say no, I answer that question, and the conclusion that I'm hearing from some members is, great, now we're not going to get what we asked for. And that's not really true. I think that the issue, you know, what Mr. Crawford said is true, that yes, it's entirely possible that somebody could look at these requirements and say that we don't want to do it. And it's just as possible that when Metro evaluates those bids, we can also decide not to award a contract to those companies that see fit not to offer amenities that are going to help the customers that we're trying to serve. So, you know, I think it's one of those things that, you know, there are going to be further opportunities to provide input, but I can tell you this much. What the RFP does have in there that there's absolutely no ambiguity on is the fact that there are going to be wheelchair accessible vehicles in this document and in this service. Okay. So that was something that we took a strong stance on because we believe that the service does need to be equitable between people who use wheelchairs and people who don't. And we did not want to create a situation where it was going to be a great thing for ambulatory people and wheelchair users who already can't hail a cab or get the kind of transportation they need, would have to sit and witness another service that would not meet their needs. We didn't want to do that, so we didn't do that. But as far as the other issues, we are allowing companies to come in and propose what they think would work in this environment. And as I told the board, and as I'm telling you, we are going to evaluate it as the people who work in access services for this organization to see whether or not what's proposed is going to meet the need. And if we find that all of the proposals are lacking, Metro does not have to award a single contract. So that decision is still within the hands of the authority, and now it's under the procurement process, which means that I can't really answer any specific questions about the RFP, that the RFP is now public. There will be a pre-bid conference on October 14th. And I believe it's at 10 in the morning.
Okay.
13?
14.
14. So I hope that all of you will come, because that is an opportunity for you all to see and meet who, you know, the interested firms might be. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Okay, I'm going to jump to my next bus rail.
Wait. You recognize me and I was awake, and you jumped over to somebody else.
Hang on. Okay, Doris. Go ahead.
Thank you. Because I'll make it fast. Three things. One, with regard to Doris's question, she did have a question about why somebody could go across the district and be paying $650, whereas they could go from the district out to Chantilly or wherever of equal distance in Maryland. And I believe the answer to that is that all metro access fares are across the region are capped at $650. And it's not, there is some dependency on, as Allison described, on the route taken and how far. But the second thing is, and so you can say A or nay to that staff if you wish, my rationale is also, I understand Denise's question to get to the heart of something that Dr. Posner brought up, which is, during state track. So what I want to know is, during state track, I expect you to say that the...
You have one of the stores.
Can you just give me a chance to get this out? Mr. Chair, by interrupting you, but you need to give me a full time because you're making me confused.
Doris.
You're making me confused. And so what I want to say is, I just want to make sure that the question has been answered regarding whether during the state track projects, in some cases, as has been brought up in the paper, it cannot depend on any kind of schedule for the rail. So how are the fares calculator taking that into account? And the last thing is with regard to the RFP, which is just whether a very discreet question. Regarding, this is what it was. Is the Abilities Ride project and any extension thereafter for this RFP, is this RFP supposed to be a service that any Metro Access rider is eligible to use? Any Metro Access.
Mr. Chair?
Go ahead, sir.
Okay, so Ms. Ray, you did get all three questions out, so we'll answer them in order. Okay, first of all, yes. Regarding the eloquent presentation that Ms. Anderson gave, yes, that is how the fare calculator works. Yes, safe track changes are supposed to be in the trip planner so that they in turn then could be used by the Metro Access fare calculator. And third and finally, yes again, any eligible Metro Access customer can use Abilities Ride.
In Maryland?
So long as they travel, you know, coming from and to a destination in Maryland.
No,
in Maryland. So it's limited to Montgomery?
Maryland.
Montgomery, PG County, correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay, good. So we can't go across DC, Virginia.
No.
Right, okay.
No, sir.
Hang on. Okay, thank you.
Can I try to hand out a yes?
Yes.
Yes, it's no.
Yes, sir.
Our time is what?
Yes, sir.
Our interpreters are?
We have them here, but we are still running out of time.
Okay.
We need to.
You're going 10 minutes.
I have, we have one more report, which is bus ramp. Dean, can you quickly?
I just want to remind members of the public hearing that's coming up for Metro Rail operating hours. I'll pour the information again, but to attend a public hearing in regards to it is Thursday, October the 20th, and it's going to be here at Metro's headquarters.
And the time of the hearing?
This public hearing, they have an open house from noon to 9 p.m., but they're indicating that the hearing is going to start around 6. That's what this is online, but I will look at the information that you sent out earlier, and maybe that will describe more about what it is. But I'll keep reminding the committee of time that's going up.
Now, so I'm going to move the position of this committee, as far as bus rail goes, to the meeting on the 11th, in which this committee can discuss that topic, because we don't have time now to discuss and come up with a committee recommendation regarding that hearing. So I'm going to table that for our discussion on the 11th.
Yes.
Any other, you have the day-to-day coming up on the 15th?
Patrick, can I just say something here outside of the train and partner? So this is my last meeting because I'm expecting my baby next week. I'm very, very close to my due date, and I promise that I will come today. So I think specifically talk about the whiteboard, because I don't know if we can. But so it's a very productive meeting. I'm glad we had this discussion to go actually out. I would reach back to some families who are already from Canada for the deaf and hard of hearing people. And from Canada, blind specifically. So I would ask that the discussion on the whiteboard be tabled until I can come back from maternity leave. I don't know how soon that would be, or if the timing on my house and baby comes. But I hope that we can bring up that discussion again and see that coming up mine. I know there's everyone on the agenda for next week, but I will not be there because I probably would either be in the hospital waiting. So I wanted to say that before the
Thanks, Brianna, for bringing that to our attention. That information actually was going to be agenda prior to the last meeting we had with rail transportation. So we moved that discussion to today's meeting after we had your piece. But that information had already gone out because it had to be braille, so it already remains. So we do understand that, and we'll coordinate with you for the next piece.
Very good.
Patrick, I do want to mention two more things, and that is appointments for VRS subcommittee. We need vice chair, so definitely at the next meeting we will be discussing that in depth, and hopefully people will be stepping up to support those roles. So we'll need people to do that, so please remember that, those members. And I want to also inform everybody that the Hettinger, the Richard W. Hettinger Award nomination period has opened. You all received that email from earlier today, and that the applications are there on the outside. We ask that you all, each person or member, take an application, share it with your constituencies, and find us a good candidate for that piece. So I just wanted to share those things.
Thank you, Dee. Do I have a motion to adjourn? Do I have a second?
Yes.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, those who stand, agree. Thank you very much for your support on that issue.